Well, let's welcome you back to This Week in the Association. I'm Rob Pannier, joined once again by my good buddy Kevin Lucco. And this week we are honored to have the return of Dan Vaughn, the voice of the Kansas City T-Bones, who's getting kind of an odd summer off. Not by choice, but he's happy to join us here tonight. So, Dan, thanks for joining us.
Hello, gentlemen. Always a pleasure to talk to you too. Yes, odd summer off. It's still feels like a bad dream.
It is totally crazy, Dan. And, you know, just kind of catch fans up on where you're at. You've still been doing stuff with the T-Bones and kind of keeping fans on what's going on. So talk a little bit about what you've been doing with yourself.
Sure. Every Wednesday I'm still doing our it's really our off-season show, but our Steakhouse show on Facebook Live and on YouTube Live as well. And trying to follow from afar, keep fans updated Twitter-wise with, you know, how guys are doing, how the Darnell Sweeneys of the world are doing in the league, the T-Bones that are playing. And then I do a show on Thursdays on SoundCloud, on our actually it's on MixLR and put on SoundCloud as well, where we do a T-Bones Greatest Hits, where we go back and listen to a great T-Bones moment, T-Bones game. Last week, for example, we did the 1,000th win for Joe Castagnetti last July in St. Paul. And so we'll go through it and listen to it, and so we're trying to stay as busy as we can. It's just trying to create some kind of something, even though we're not playing, but want to be a part of things. And we're also contributing to the American Association television site, doing a little kind of pared-down show we do, basically taking the Wednesday show and chopping it down and giving the folks a little something to satisfy their T-Bones fandom while we're waiting around until 2021.
Well, before having Kevin jump in here, tell us a little bit about where somebody would go out and listen to your Thursday broadcast and kind of catch up on things.
Yeah, the T-Bones, it's the same spot we do our normal radio broadcast on MixLR, M-I-X-L-R, MixLR. And so just go to Kansas City T-Bones. Go to MixLR.com. That'll pull up the MixLR application. Type in Kansas City T-Bones, and you'll see our channel comes up, and that's where our live channel is. And then on Facebook Live, it's on the T-Bones. Actually, it's on my personal Facebook. Due to furlough, I've had to put it on there, but we will repurpose that video shortly after they're on the T-Bones Facebook page. And also, you can go to YouTube and go to Dan Vaughn Jr. on YouTube, and my YouTube channel's there. It's got all my shows plus my – if you really want to really, really do something special for your lovely wife or family, I've got some cooking shows on there, too. I've been doing about once every couple of weeks a cooking show. The broadcaster can cook, so you can check those out, too. They're all there on my YouTube page.
Man, I've been missing out on all this information. Boy, I didn't know Dan's got recipes. Now I got to check this out now.
Yes, we filmed one yesterday. We'll be debuting a great baked rib for your pleasure later on this week. So, yes.
Oh. So, what's the personal specialty of Dan Vaughn?
Foreman from Arrington to pick up.
Yes. Yeah, the Foreman. I love my salmon dish I make. I've got several variations of it, but it's called Kiss Salmon. It's made in the oven or the grill. I like that. We'll be doing a couple weeks from now. I'll be shooting this one's going to be a good one. This is going to be a grilled lobster tail, kind of what you might see over in Australia. And then grilled chicken wings, I've done that. Those are also my favorites. But I'm a fat kid, so I like to eat. And then this summer is not boding well, so have to do some cooking videos.
Kevin, why isn't Dan out there doing lobster tails when you're doing green brats, green onion brats? What happened there?
I was kind of thinking of that. If I got into the business, and one week would be green onion brats, one would be garlic sausage, and frankly, it would be pretty boring. Most of the time, it would just be me sitting around flipping the brats while drinking a beer and watching American Association baseball on my phone. So I don't think you're going to get a lot of clicks on that.
Well, the green onion brat, I can tell you right now, is awesome, and I miss them. And that's one of the things I'm missing this summer is going to St. Paul and knowing that I'm going to see Kevin and he's going to bring something from his tailgate to the broadcasters.
Well, Dan, you know, you've had a kind of a chance to watch the first, we're about 3 weeks into the season right now. So kind of what have been your thoughts on the American Association to this point?
Well, thumbs up, man. I think what they've done is phenomenal. You look at what's been going on with, you know, this whole deal, and the fact they've only had one really COVID out, if you want to call it, rain out, and that's been great. I love the TV coverage, the new TV platform or the web platform with the AA baseball is also a big plus. And it's, these teams are super teams too. They're stacked. I mean, it's like every team is competitive and a playoff type team. You've got six really stacked teams that it's 1 through 9. There's an easy out. There's no one you can pitch around. The bullpens are deep. The rotations are deep. I mean, it's really fun to watch. And you've got such a real, you know, it's almost like almost an all-star league this year with all the players ever taken in this personal draft and then the teams who already have their players. It's really a really competitive brand of baseball. And I found it as entertaining as watching anything else in the world right now, baseball-wise, and that includes Korea, Japan, and what we saw this weekend with the big leagues. I love what the association is doing. And two thumbs up to be rolling right along and do what they're doing.
Yeah, if you can find something better to spend $20 on, then let me know, because I mean it's been fun every night to tune in and get high quality baseball.
Yeah, the teams are so deep too. I guess I didn't realize that, guys, until, you know, I mean, I watched the draft and you know, the dispersal draft and did a little show on that, but I guess I've not really realized it until I really watched. You know, watch the Milwaukee-Chicago series, and it was a series that was a big one. That six-game stretch was huge for Chicago to get back in the race. And Milwaukee was kind of putting distance themselves, and both those lineups were so deep, and every night was different, and just so many options. And these managers got even a larger bench and a larger roster, and that gives them so much more flexibility. It's an exciting brand of baseball right now.
Well, you talked a little bit about the dispersal draft. You know, a lot of those players that moved around were Kansas City guys. I think they have doubled the next team out there. What's been your thoughts on how those guys have been performing so far?
Well, if there's a better guy finding talent in the association than Joe Capietta, I don't know who that would be. Maybe there's a couple guys. I mean, I think what Rick Forney and what George Samus do is phenomenal, and what Greg Taggart does. Kevin Gary with his bunch, but what Joe does, reloading and reloading, and he gets good, not just good players, but good human beings, and it's so fun to see a guy like Darnell Sweeney, who came, you know, was in the T-Bones last year, was signed by the Pirates, went to AAA, came back to the association, and, you know, leads the league in home runs, top five guy in RBIs. You know, I love Dylan Tice, see what he can do. You know, Mikey Reynolds, a former T-Bone that Joe had 2 years, or last year, early on, and then kind of Tyson supplanted him. Reynolds is doing what he's doing. You know, Frank Duncan, a guy, former KU Jayhawk, he's there in Winnipeg. I mean, and if you're a T-Bone fan, you're going, man, boy, he's been a great replacement for Tommy Collier, who went on the Atlantic League. I mean, you're seeing so much depth out there. Roy Morales is part of a two-catcher tandem there as well, you know, with him and John Nestor. I mean, just unbelievable what depth the T-Bones have. And it all goes back to what Joe does. And to a degree, Chris Brown, the vice president, general manager, Chris has got connections too. But those two guys together are doing such a phenomenal job. And it just shows you the change of culture that Joe Capietta brought to Kansas City back in 2017 when he took over. And it's, you know, guys want to play for the T-Bones. They want to play for Joe. They're going to get a chance to get seen. And you're seeing that when you have 17 of those guys, you know, get drafted. No, the team was close to that. It speaks volumes about what Joe does.
I wonder if it's possible for a manager and a GM that don't even have a team plan to get manager and GM of the year.
Why not? I would. Joe would definitely get a couple of votes, at least from this guy.
Yeah, you know, I bet it's hard for you, though. I mean, you know, watching all these guys doing so well somewhere else and thinking, man, if we would have been playing this season, this team would have been unbelievable.
Well, and I started to tweet lately, you know, especially with Winnipeg has had such a good run with Sweeney and with Duncan, you know, and just seeing those two names. Well, Jordan George, who was also back with the T-Bones this year after a short stay with the Royals. And you're starting to see these guys. And I've been saying, you know, I've been kind of tongue-in-cheeking it with the Winnipeg folks, but, you know, tweeting fun things like, you know, from the what might have been department, I think it was my tweet this morning from what might have been, you know, yesterday, you know, Sweeney had a home run and Duncan got seven strong shutout innings. And, you know, it definitely is what might have been. You look up and down that roster, what the T-Bones had coming back and what Joe seems to find at every turn. It's bittersweet. I'm not going to lie to you. I would love to see what the T-Bones had on paper role in the association this year. It's a tough thing to watch.
It's tough to watch, but just imagine if you get a lot of those guys back for a 2021 season. You definitely got something to look forward to if you can get most of the guys to come back.
And that's true. And what I think, too, again, is what Joe does. Joe has a relationship, and I know Dylan Tice is playing with Milwaukee, and Dylan was on our show right after he got in the dispersal draft. That was actually during training camp, right, before opening day in Milwaukee. And he'll tell you, you know, he's a Joe guy. What Joe's done to keep his career going, give him opportunities, it means a lot to him. And those are the kind of players that want to play for Joe. Joe's a guy that he's an emotional guy. He has an emotional attachment to his players. They're like, it's funny, he's like myself, we both have daughters. And he's got two daughters, and he's got all these sons that he has that he signs every year. He really treats them like that. It's really a special relationship. And I wouldn't be surprised next year to have dang near I would say a good percentage of guys back in the fold for Kansas City based upon Joe Caspietra alone.
You know, as you watch what's going on this season, and you're kind of, I'm assuming that the organization is sort of prepping itself for 2021. Are there things that you're seeing that, you know, like I'm looking at new ownership group and you already had changed kind of the team colors and we're looking to do some things in terms of different promotions. Is there some things that you're looking at right now that you're going, wow, here's some great ideas we can implement next year. Here's something that should really make Kansas City a great spot for baseball next year.
Well, the bad thing was all the negative news we had, of course, and you guys know this. You come to the league back last September. There was a lot of – we took a little bit of a beating in the local media there. I'm not going to lie to you. I think anybody can Google that and can tell you that. But then Mark Brandmeier comes rolling right along and purchases the ball club. He's kept the team local. The ownership group is local. Mark is a KU grad. His partners are KU people. They're Kansas City all the way. There's a lot of extra ties as well. Locally to other Kansas City folks. It's very Kansas City centric. There's a lot of excitement and boom, here comes the pandemic. And it's, I feel for Mark Brandmeier. I feel for our entire staff because we were really fired up last February. You know, we were there for our press conference. The mayor was there of Kansas City. The mayor of Kansas City, Missouri was there. I mean, you had all these dignitaries. Everyone was so excited about the new, return of the T-Bones with the, you know, the new logo, the new color scheme. You know, everyone was fired up and boom. It's like the cover got pulled out from underneath of you. Suddenly, the excitement was gone. We didn't get a chance to fulfill it. I know we spent hours, as all these staff do, planning and preparing and ready to go for a season. Then I have a chance. And for us, I think it was hard because, you know, in St. Paul's case, they've been doing it a long time, and they're doing it at a very high level. I mean, they what they do, no one does what they do. But our folks were trying to get off the ground and say, look, we're a new thing. We got a new blood. We're excited. And to not be able to share that with our fans and with our metro area of Kansas City and our league, that was the most disappointing part. And it kind of parlayed to that is that the good news is, and this happened last week, you may have seen this, but you know, the Kansas City Royals needed a place to play their taxi squad, have them work out. Well, they chose T-Bone Stadium in their relationship with Chris Brown, who was a bat boy for them in the 80s. So seeing something like that shows us that there's still very good vibes in Metro Kansas City for the T-Bones, that we have a unique role, a unique partnership with the Kansas City Royals, with the baseball family of the area, and it's there's a stack of ideas that Morgan Kalinda has on her desk right now, ready to go, but it's so frustrating you can't put them into action because we're not playing baseball. But it's kind of a long-winded answer for you guys, but it's been a crazy, crazy time, and I feel from Mark Brandmeier and ownership and the entire staff, because we got this new toy we want to unveil, but dang it, we can't unveil it for a whole other year. And that's the frustrating part.
Well, now that you mention that, the new owners all got that connection with going to Kansas, K SKU. Now we know why we got the blue and red color scheme.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, I guess
Rock Chalk Jayhawk.
A little bit. You know, I think it called for a little bit of a tweak. I love the T-Bone's name, and I think anytime you get a new ownership or new blood, you want to kind of tweak things. That was a perfect tweak. It does match it matches really the two teams that are so popular in our metropolitan area. The Chiefs red with some royal blue, and it happens to match the Jayhawks as well. So it's all a nice little match, and it's going to be great to unveil that next year.
Well, you know, the old logo is going to carry its legacy on with the special Sunday Mike March and Gold Club charity jerseys that people like myself will wear every Sunday when we go to a ball game.
Oh yeah, I didn't get rid of any of mine either. I'm still keeping them, and I've got a lot of mates wearing T-Bone gear all across the world and that old logo, so it means a lot to me. And I haven't cleared my closet out of it yet. I just got to get new colors now for the 21 season.
You know, and I mentioned this when I wore my T-Bones jersey last Sunday to a game. I think the T-Bones ought to do something on Facebook where, like, every Sunday, people take pictures of what they're doing and have them wearing whatever T-Bones gear they got. Show them, wear your T-Bones gear on Sunday, take a picture, and post it on the Facebook page.
Love it, love it. I may have to forward that on to Morgan. I'm sure I know she's busy too, but it's such a weird time when a lot of us are trying to do two different things at once with, you know, with the pandemic and then trying to stay afloat as well. But, that's a great idea, so I'll have to make sure that she gets that. Or heck, you know what? You know her. You can message her too.
Sure. I can do that.
You know, Dad, I want to ask you, because when we had the commissioner on, Josh Schaub, before the season began, he was talking to us about that he actually believes that the six owners whose teams aren't playing this year will come out of this season even stronger and better. Is that kind of the attitude that's going on there with the T-Bones right now?
I think so. You know, anytime opening day comes up, it's always it's like an ant pile. You kind of stir the ant pile, everybody's running like crazy. Well, this was an ant pile that had a brand new ownership group and some new people in sales with their old holdovers, myself, Chris Brown, Morgan, Nate Miller, our groundskeeper, some of our tickets folks, but you had a real mix of old and new, and I think that have been, I think looking back on it now, you're going to get even a longer lead in to when we open up again in 21, and I think we will just be that much more prepared. I'm not saying we're scared to start, I mean, it wasn't like that at all, but I think going forward, knowing that in 2021, we'll have to, you know, and Mark Brandmar, he's a businessman. He knows his business, but he's new to baseball, and he's learning as he goes. And you know, Mark McKee, who's our chief sales officer, he's been selling for years, but sports is new to him. And these guys are kind of learning to go. We're also, as a staff, myself, they're learning me, and I'm learning them, and we're all kind of bonding. It's like any team. You're the longer you're together, the longer lead-in you have to get prepared, the better off you're going to be. And I think in the long run, we're going to be much better off because of it in 2021, because we will, you know, all the things that have happened this year with the pandemic and all that, nothing will shock us next year. We won't be surprised till opening day 21.
Now, you talked a little bit about, you know, Joe's relationship with the players and how close he is to them. This must be a very hard season for him.
Yeah. There's probably a bad combination. Probably the two most emotional broadcaster and the most emotional manager are teamed up on the same team bus, because I think there's no doubt that I care about what I do, and I know Joe cares about what he does. And it's been hard. I know it's been hard on him. I purposely, for a reason, kind of let him kind of just give him some time. I know it was hard for him. He had to make those calls. He personally, I know he made all those calls himself. He didn't send out an email. He didn't send out a mass text saying, hey, folks. And he wanted to let each guy know what the situation was, what was going to happen, and how things were going to go down. And it was hard on him. He's always so accommodating. He does our broadcast pregame show every day. He talks to me 100 times a year. Every home game he does our postgame show, as you guys have seen. He's always gracious at this time. He'll come on anytime I ask him to come on during the off season. And I just know how emotionally, how much he cares about what he does, our brand, our team, our staff, our ownership. And I've kind of stepped back because I know how hard it's been on him. It's been a real tough go for him. I mean, it's been tough on all of us, but I know especially on Joe, it's been very hard on him, and I feel for him.
I wonder what Mrs. Calfapietro is thinking this summer, having her hubby around all the time. That's got to feel real weird.
Yeah, well, you know, it is weird. It's like my wife and I were talking at dinner earlier. You know, we would say the T-Bones were down in Texas. We'd be at our house in Dallas where we live in the winter, and we'd be driving across the Metroplex in the 98-degree heat to go broadcast to T-Bones and Cleburne game. And you know, it's weird just to be sitting around having dinner on a July night, and it's July 27th, and heck, opening day for baseball for the big leagues was July, what, 24th, 23rd? I mean, it's just bizarre to have that whole thing going on. It's been a bizarre year, but, you know, what I've done, and I know Joe's done this too, and, you know, our entire staff, I've tried to spend as much time with my wife, much time with my family, and just do things we've not done. You know, we haven't really had a summer vacation, so we went last week up to Arkansas and then spent a little time on the lakes and just things we haven't done before. So I'm trying to make the most of it. The goal is to come out of this thing better in the end than we went into it. And one of those things will be able to make up for time we don't get in the summer.
You know, up here in Minnesota, we have 4,000 amateur baseball players, but yet I don't think anyone was more happier when the season began up here than my wife to finally get my butt out of the house.
Well, I think my wife probably, I think she loves having me home. At the same time, there are times when you know, I'm a little bit of a caged animal as well, that, you know, okay, I got to do something. What am I going to do? What am I going to do today? And I think that probably goes into as well. So she probably is right there with you, or right there with her, wants to kick me out of the house too.
You know, I'm kind of curious, Dan, do you try to keep up your skills by, like, sitting in the window watching cars going by and you're kind of like, you know, Joe Smith driving down the road at about 25 miles an hour right now? I mean, what do you try to do to keep those skills up?
When we first went down, during spring break, my wife teaches school in Dallas. We went to spring break. We went to Belize. It was an exciting, great time. When we were gone, Dallas-Fort Worth got locked down, where the whole lockdown was like 90, almost 100 days, the first lockdown. And I came back and I was like, you know, how am I going to kind of keep myself? Because I did all my bios for the season. I was prepared. I did all the records. I went back through all the records for the T-Bones and kind of updated for they hadn't been updated since 14. And so I was pretty much ahead of the game. I needed something to kind of keep me sort of going. So I started a virtual happy hour, which I know Kevin knows a little bit about. I'm on Facebook Live, and it's not play-by-play, but it's kind of talking, you know, from the seat of your pants, so to speak. No real topic. I have a few topics, but I kind of let the show kind of come and go. And sometimes it's a broadcasting genius, and sometimes it's just a waste of time. Today's show was a lot of fun, but, you know, it's that in itself probably helped me more than anything else, just going on Facebook Live and chatting for 45 minutes and just kind of trying to carry the show and have something to say and not do anything else but that. That's helped my skills. And I've also taken time too, guys, to work on things that I haven't done. You know, I haven't done a lot. I hadn't had a chance to video edit. I've really worked on that, doing those video shows and things like that. Just little skills like that. I've done a play-by-play demo for football. I hadn't done football in 25 years. So I did one of those just to keep me busy. So just trying to do whatever to stay busy as best I can. But I haven't sat around and called the neighbors walking the dog yet.
Now, yeah. is there a little league being played down in Texas?
You know, I don't know. I think so. Yes, there is. There is. I have a fraternity brother of mine from college whose kids are playing in the mid-city. So, yes, they are playing down. I don't know what the restrictions are, but I guess I can go out and check that out.
Yeah, just pop in and set up and do a broadcast. Kind of like what Jack Michaels did up in Fargo before the Red Hawks season began.
Yeah, that might be a good idea, right? Or just, like I said, just play-by-play with the neighbors walking the dog. I mean, that might be, you know, the dog picks out a good spot. Let everybody know. Here he comes, folks.
He's backing up. Yeah, You know, Dan, I got to tell you, this is no offense to you, but
they call him the squatter.
I listened in on a couple of your virtual happy hour shows, and the one in particular that got me on in the first place was the night that it was announced, kind of, that the T-Bones weren't playing, and it was a dispersal draft one, the night of the dispersal draft. And I'm sorry, but your mother kind of stole the show. I mean, I got to honestly tell you, she's quite a lady.
Yes, she just turned 80, and last week, she rocks. My mom is so awesome, and I'm so blessed to have such a great fan group of her and my wife and just the family in general. But she is. And I start the show when I do with this happy hour. I started off with mom. I mean, she's the first one. She's ready to go. I have a guest every day. It's my mom. So at worst case scenario, mom and son chat about life, about what she did, what she's eating for dinner, and you know, what's the scoop in Indiana where she lives. But she's always on the show, and from there it can go really, really south fast or take off like it did on Friday when she shamed Kevin into being back on the show again. So she'll get your attention. She's a piece of work, that one.
Yeah, like I said on the show, I lost my mom in 2016. So any mom now that tells me to do something, I got to listen.
And as she said, you're the only one that listens to her these days, so that's a good thing. So.
Meanwhile, I'm having my mom say, well, geez, he never listened to me. Why is he listening to someone else's mom?
Wow. You know, let's talk a little bit about that. Kind of the big news around Major League Baseball now, which is Miami Marlins had a number of players test positive for COVID-19, and tonight's game was canceled. You know, it's funny because, odd funny, that American Association had a couple of cases early on in the season, but boy, they really have done a great job of protecting players and staff from any issue with this, and I wonder if Major League Baseball should send somebody down to the commissioner's office to learn some things down here.
You know, I thought initially that this was going to be a real tough thing. I mean, just on paper, because this pandemic, this whole coronavirus thing is obviously something we've never been through. I mean, we all know that. It's unprecedented times. But all the talk that Major League Baseball put in about the bubbles and, how they'd isolate, and you're thinking, well, how in the world is the little old American Association going to pull off bubble cities and testing and safety protocols with such a – because it is what it is. It's a great league, but it's a small league. They don't have there's not 100 people on staff. I mean, even the biggest staff in the league, maybe St. Paul's or probably the largest staff, even their staff's not that big compared to a major league staff. You don't have a lot of extra bodies around, but I was worried about that. But I think what we're seeing, though, guys, is that the fact that Major League Baseball is such a big operation and affects so many people. You have to have chairmen and umpires and clubhouse people and all these people, these extra people you got to have. There's just too many. Well, the American Association's strength is the fact that it is small, it is very, very compact. That's been a real plus. And I think you look at what the mistakes Major League Baseball's made, the American Association didn't make, and it's clearly obvious the differences, one being the bubble cities have been huge. And I think, again, the fact that you have smaller numbers of players to really, I call it babysit, is an advantage. I thought it would have been a disadvantage at first. Looking back on it, it's been a real advantage. And what both Joshua and Josh have done with the league, I mean, I am so blown away. What a great job they've done to keep everybody basically on the straight and narrow.
Couldn't agree more. They've done a great job of protecting, you know, keeping players safe. And talking with Mike Meyer and Chris Coast this season, they've talked about, you know, there's this kind of a random testing just to ensure that players are – monitored and know, kind of know what's going on. And the players seem to be totally accommodating to this. So you got to give a lot of credit to them, too, for accepting that, hey, this is what they got to do to stay on the field. And everybody seems to be on board with this.
Yeah, I remember when I talked to Dylan Tice and Christian Correa both right as this thing started, the season did. And they were both saying that, you know, one of the things that stood out to them was that every day something new would happen. They just adjusted on the fly. They said, hey, no big deal. It's what we deal with. They knew going into their situation this year that it was a different year, unlike any year they've ever played. There's nothing they can compare this to. And so they knew going in that there are going to be curveballs thrown at him, and you have to adjust. And I think what the league's done to do that has been phenomenal. There's probably at least a dozen things they don't even know about that have happened behind the scenes that they've adjusted and not missed a beat. And where Major League Baseball, all the money, all the publicity, all the television coverage, they can't get out of their own way. And it's unfortunate for the game, but it's great for the American Association.
Yeah, I'm just afraid at some point we're going to lose our Joshes to MLB.
For real.
That was a gutty thing to do. I mean, that was a let's look back on this. That was a roll of the dice. I mean, those six teams all rolled the dice, and I thought I'd been the owner of one of those teams. I'd have been nervous as heck, knowing that. Can we get this thing through week one? Can we get it through week two? Can we even get through the whole season? And this thing has gone swimmingly comparatively to what's been going on across, you know, other places. Now, granted, some of that's toward these things are going on, these hub cities and, of course, Milwaukee and Chicago. Some of it's where they're at located. But a good majority of it's what they've done protocol-wise. And a tip of the cap to players. I mean, they've all – I've not heard and seen on social media the guys I've talked to. None of them come out and said, boy, this is a joke. They've all been real positive about it.
Now, well, it sounds like they've been really smart, too, that they're not going out to bars or going being part of big crowds when they're off the field. It sounds like the players have been very disciplined on how they handle themselves off the field, too. So, you know, it's tipping a cap there also.
Absolutely.
Now, before we began tonight's show, we were talking a little bit about where the standings were, and one of the things we were discussing was that Fargo kind of struggling early on here, and you know it might take a 6-1 run. And you were talking a little bit about how this season kind of compares down to Australian baseball. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, the Australian Baseball League. This reminds me so much of the ABL. Of course, only difference is there's 8 teams in the Australian Baseball League, but for many years there were only 6. And you can either, you know, the idea in the ABL, you play, you know, for the 40-game schedule, and I've seen teams who go on a stretch where they have 2 weeks where they get swept on a road trip, come home and lose a series 3-1 in a 4-game series, and they've gone one in 7, and they find themselves 6 games back, only 3 teams make the playoffs, or 2 teams make the playoffs. They find themselves, or actually it's 4 in the ABL now, with the 8 teams. They find themselves, you know, 5.5, 6, 7 games back with only, you know, 12 games left. It's almost impossible to make that up. I mean, you cannot go into a long tailspin by the flip of the coin, too. You can also run away from the division. I know one year, this happens all the time, but so I'll use Perth as an example, where they've gotten won every series, their first 5 series, and won every series. And we're basically on cruise control the last 4 weeks of the season because all they had to do was just show up and they'd made the playoffs. It was that easy because they'd taken care of the business. But these short sprints can be really dangerous because you could, you know, it's like Sioux Falls last year. It was a stretch there last year. They were the best team in the league for about a 6-week period. They were the best team in the league, but they didn't finish in the hunt in the end. And that's kind of what we're looking at right now. If you can go a 6-week schedule of being the best in the league, you've got a really good chance to make the playoffs in this format. That's the same thing in Australia. If you go on a 6-week stretch in Australia in a 10-week season, you've got a dang good chance to finish as the number one seed and take care of business for the postseason. That's exactly what this thing's like. It's a sprint. And, you know, all it takes is one little funk. And you look at the standings today, you know, I'm looking at Fargo. They've dropped 5 straight. They got to get business. They got to get going and turn this thing around. They need a 6-1 stretch, or they could be out of this thing before, you know, August 10th.
Yeah, when you look at the math, it's when you're playing a 6-game week, and that's 10% of your season.
Yeah.
Now, let's put that in Major League Baseball terms. In a normal season, that's like playing 16 Major League games.
Yep.
So if you go 6-0 in a week, sweep 2 series, that's like running off a 16-game streak in Major League Baseball. And most of the time, that means you're a playoff team.
Absolutely. That's why you hear me talk about during the normal American association season. Joe and I talk about this all the time. It's winning series. You keep winning series, you're going to be okay because you're stacking up those series wins. It's the same principle. You in the short season, you get a 5-game winning streak in a short season like this. I mean, that's like winning, you know, like you said, winning 12, 13 games in a row. You do two of those, you basically get 2 5-game winning streaks, 2 6-game winning streaks. It's almost impossible not to be in the top three.
Very true. Well, Dan, as you kind of look at the teams out there, who do you see as – because this year you don't have to worry about being unbiased or ruffling anybody's feathers or anything like that. So who do you think are going to be the two teams to make the playoffs?
Well, it was a big week last week for Chicago and for Milwaukee. And Milwaukee was on the top of the ladder, but they had that 6-game stretch where, you know, those two teams could, you know, Chicago could easily have been the one in Fargo's spot, but they'd climbed up a bit. I thought it was a big week for Chicago to kind of close the gap. You know, they're back, you know, 3.5 back, whatever. I still think Winnipeg, I mean, every time I've watched them, it didn't matter if they're the home team in Fargo, the road team in Fargo. I love what Rick's got. I mean, he's using some pretty talented T-bone signings as well, but I love the depth of that ball club and the pitching of that ball club. I still think St. Paul will have a say in the long run. I think George Samus is phenomenal at getting bodies left and right, and I think eventually, you know, you put a Nate Sampson, he's eventually going to get red hot and can help out a lot. But I like those two. I still like Winnipeg, and I like St. Paul, even though they're 3.5 back. But I still think Winnipeg's there. In the end, I think St. Paul's there to get both of them.
I like it.
Well, Rob and I have jinxed Chicago, so you know, we're starting to look a little smarter now that the Dogs have turn it around, and I think it's been what Rob and I were talking about. It's been the Dogs pitching that has picked up the pace.
Yeah, if you look at their pitching, I thought early on that when that draft happened, I saw their roster, I was like, you know what? I mean, they're going to be the class of the league. I mean, they're A+, everybody else is a B, and they didn't get off to a good start. And, you know, you look at the two teams that have been most consistent is Winnipeg and Sioux Falls. And you look back, you shouldn't be surprised about Sioux Falls because last year, as I mentioned, that 6-game stretch, and Rob and I know this from our talk last year, but for stretch there, Sioux Falls was the most dominating team in the association. And in a short sprint like that, I could see them very well be like that again. And it's kind of interesting to see that they're both Sioux Falls and Winnipeg have been the most consistent up and down the lineups, pitching-wise. Bullpen strength for Sioux Falls has been phenomenal. Rotation for Winnipeg. I mean, you know, those two teams have been the most consistent. The record shows it.
I can just see somewhere down the line where, heaven forbid, Robert Pinier passes away and we're all at his wake, and here comes the flood of Kansas City fans bringing in copies of the 2019 game to put in his casket.
I will not let that happen to him. I will not let Rob be born that way. Let that happen to him.
I have to tell you, I'm a manager whose name will leave unknown at this point. After about a week ago, maybe 9 or 10 days ago, when Chicago was getting hammered in a game they were playing in Fargo, was being beaten too, and both of them were like 5th and 6th in the divisions, sent me a text message and said, "You are totally the kiss of death." I mean, you are the ultimate kiss of death. I just laughed.
Well, do me a favor, Rob. Never pick the T-bones to do anything with them, all right?
Everybody's saying that now, Dan. I think that I seriously could get a fund going that would be like, just don't pick me. That's the don't pick me fund. So
yeah, I'll give you an extra 20 spot. It's not a pick, right? I'll make sure you get some extra green onion broths when you come to town or whatever it is you want.
I want some of that barbecue you got going on there. Those ribs sound good, Dan. I'm going to be all over that, man.
Well, Dan,
before we jump out tonight, we wanted to thank you again. And do you have a good final thought for us to take us out here this evening?
Oh, well, I'm glad that you guys do what you do. I champion you too. You guys are the only guys that really get the league, I think, full time. And, you know, there's a lot of folks that cover us, but no one covers us like you do. And I appreciate the work you guys do. It's a labor of love for a lot of us, and I know it is for you too as well. We're not getting rich and retiring to the islands doing this. We're doing it because we love it, and you guys are a real inspiration. I appreciate you guys, what you guys do, and always welcoming to come on the show. And love what I'm on, and just wish you guys the best, and looking forward to a bona fide fun in 2021.
Amen.
Awesome. Thanks for joining us this week, Dan.
You bet, mate. Cheers.
Well, we want to thank Dan Vaughn once again for joining us. It's always a great pleasure to have the great Dan Vaughn talking about what's going on in the American Association. As a quick note before Kevin and I discuss what's going on around the league, I do want to apologize about a little technical glitch on my part with Chelsea Ladd's show from last week. In a rush to head to Albuquerque to get my broken down car, I had put everything together. I just had forgot to actually post the show onto the page for it. So my apologies about that. Chelsea was awesome, and we hope to have her back on the show again pretty soon. Well, Kevin, it's been an interesting week around the American Association because a week ago we were kind of wondering if the Chicago Dogs were dead, and they made quite a rally to get back into things, and I think it starts with the exciting news about Luke Westfall returning.
Right. What was already a stacked pitching staff just got even tougher with the return of Luke Westfall. It pitched one game in relief, and then he was back in the starting rotation already, picking up I believe he got a win in his start. So, wow, I just don't catch a break when you face the Chicago Dogs as far as a starting pitcher.
They
might make us look smart after all, Rob.
What's been impressive about him, too, is that he picked up right where he left off last season. So it was like he gave up just the one run in the five innings that he was in, that his start was in, struck out 13 in 8 innings this season. I mean, I understand he's already given up a run. What's wrong with him? You know, after what we saw at the beginning of last season. But, man, this guy came back, and it looks like he has totally solidified the starting rotation now. And you and I might actually look smart for once, Kevin. You're right.
Yeah, I'm liking my bets right now with Winnipeg and Chicago. So
I'm thinking Luke Westfall just earned our Pitcher of the Year award just for helping us save face out here. A couple of other big signings that happened this week. Alonzo Harris, after a few years of being parted from the St. Paul Saints, returns to the team, struggling a little early on, but so is Nate Sampson, struggling for St. Paul, finally getting his swing back. So that's two huge bats at the 3 and 5 spot in the Saints order. And, you know, if you're in any normal season, if you were talking about adding Alonzo Harris and Nate Sampson to any team, you'd feel like that team is a serious contender for the championship. And you got to feel that way about the Saints now.
Yeah, that's almost, you mentioned those two guys in your regular lineup. You're thinking, oh, you're putting an all-star team out there or what? But you look at the Saints batting order right now. I know the league recognized John Silviano as hitter of the week. Silviano's starting to get on a bit of a roll, starting to hit some balls out of the ballpark. Mikey Reynolds has been everything they could ask for out of a leadoff hitter. Jesse Young been really good. Chris Chenea, who we gave thought of for player of the week, has been a pillar behind the plate and has been good at the plate. So you look at the Saints bats, I know, yeah, they're playing a lot of games in Sioux Falls, but it's not a fluke. There's up and down that lineup. They've got some hitting.
You know, Chenea, am I saying that right?
Chenea.
The one thing that I am amazed at about George Stamos is here's another guy kind of brought in late for catching. We got to see this the last 3 years. That he's brought in, you know, Justin O'Connor a couple years ago and Jeremy Martinez last season, and just finds some guy that, you know, it seems like this is the last piece, and you thought you'd be filling in, you know, your fifth outfielder at that point or something, but he's getting a starting catcher and getting just all-star guys who are putting up big numbers offensively, playing great behind the plate, handling his pitching staff well. This guy's a serious MVP candidate right now.
Yeah. In college hockey, they always used to refer to the University of Wisconsin as goaltender university because their goalies always went on to play in the NHL. I think you might refer to the St. Paul Saints as catcher you because it just seems to be like a steady line of really good catchers that end up with the St. Paul Saints.
You know, it's funny. The Saints are playing a lot better now and don't even have Sebastian Zuada back here yet. So that was your guy you were really looking to watch on this season. And when his return comes back here, he returns back, that team's really going to be look even more formidable.
Does he have, like, a taxi squad? Is he playing somewhere, staying sharp, or are we not like the MLB in that way?
I think he's returning soon. On the injured list or something right now, but close to coming back here pretty soon.
That's going to be tough because I don't know who that on that roster you would part with to get him back because that's a crowded outfield now with the addition of Harris.
Absolutely, and Troy Alexander played so well.
Yeah, Harris, Reynolds, and Max Murphy. Murphy's starting to hit again, and Troy Alexander had a nice start to the season, and Justin Bird has been adequate. So, yeah, it's a crowded outfield.
Yeah, Bird's hitting .309, Alexander at .368. Both might wind up on a bench. That's a nice luxury to have two guys like that sitting working, just coming in to pinch hit when you need them. The other big acquisition that we want to talk about, a guy that we've come to love here on This Week in the Association, Jose Cermo, signed by the Milwaukee Milkmen. Cermo, the 2018 American Association MVP, is named by Kevin and myself here at This Week in the Association. And this is a guy who's got just a huge bat. It's probably going to take him about a week or 10 days, but we know that he's going to swing well.
Right. I think he's getting to Milwaukee just in time because if we look at the Milkmen in the last week, there's not a lot of guys swinging good bats right now. Granted, a lot of that's got to do with the Chicago pitching, but there's a lot of guys in that lineup with good resumes that just are not producing right now. And you put Jose Cermo in that mix, and we don't know what's going on with Chase Simpson if he eventually gets healthy. Wow, you know, a batting order with Simpson and Cermo both, and that's dangerous. But yeah, right now, the Milkmen are struggling with the bats. So Cermo, I think he showed up just in time.
Yeah, you're talking about a lot of guys that we've come to see as premier hitters in this league. Mason Davis hitting .205 right now. Zach Neerier at .221. David Washington coming in his first year in the league at .234. Aaron Hill at .240, Logan Trowbridge at .246, Dylan Tice at .263. We're gonna give some honest dap there to Chicago for the fact that this is a quality pitching staff out there, and you're facing guys that are in the major leagues. A lot of these guys, but this is a team that we expect to see a lot of hitting out, and they're just getting nothing right now. And you got to wonder that even Cermo coming into this lineup, if Neerier and Tice and at least three of these guys don't start turning things around pretty soon, you know, do they need to blow this lineup up? Anthony Barone has changed the lineup around quite a bit to try to do something to get this group hitting, but it just hasn't seemed to work at this point.
Yeah, it's you preach to be patient because these guys all have resumes of being really good hitters in this league. And it's not like there's some minor league system you can just go pluck someone out of and have them ready for game action right away. So, as I think some teams have found out that have picked up guys, that it takes like 7 to 10 games to find your stroke again. So, do you cut a guy that's hit well in the league and bring someone in that's going to need that training camp time to find their swing, 10 games, that's a big chunk of the season. So you might just have to stick with the horses you got and hope they can figure the stuff out at the plate.
Well, if there was ever a team that was looking for an opportunity to get away from their ballpark and head towards a hitter's ballpark, you got to think Milwaukee's got to be excited to be heading to Sioux Falls starting Tuesday.
Yeah, I'm sure they'll be looking at the forecast, too, and making sure that hot Sioux Falls wind is a-blowing.
Well, let's move on to the big controversy today, Kevin. The player and pitcher of the American Association for this week were named both by us and by the league. Complete difference of opinion, a point streak naming As Kevin mentioned, John Silviano from the St. Paul Saints is the player of the week, and choosing reliever Adam Choplik, which I believe is the correct way to say that, from the Chicago Dogs. Kevin and I chose Frank Duncan from the Winnipeg Gold Eyes as the pitcher of the week and went with player of the week Victor Roach from the Chicago Dogs. So, Kevin, let's first of all talk about the player week. You can't, you can make a solid argument for each of them, but we just liked Roach.
Well, the way I look at it, too, I think Victor Roach having a big week like this was a catalyst to Chicago getting their offense on track to match their pitching, and we saw the results as they put up a 5-1 record over the week.
Absolutely. Victor Roach finishes the six games this week, hitting .476, homered four times, including in three consecutive games in Milwaukee. Only drove in the four runs, and we get that Silviano drove in 10, so we're not arguing with that in any way, but we like the fact that he was first in OPS and first in slugging this week. So Victor Roach was just seemed like the natural pick for us. And as Kevin has said, one thing we've always tried to do in naming players of the week and pitchers of the week was, what's the situation? Chicago is looking dead. I mean, if they have a bad week last week, you know, 20 games into the season, unfortunately, is a third of the season, and if they would have gone 1-5, their season would be over right now. So his contribution at this moment was as big as it gets, I think.
Right. We know we're not sophisticated enough to know what this win above replacement garbage is all about, but we do know if a guy had a monster week and your team won 5 out of 6 games, then maybe you ought to lean towards that direction. All respect to John Silviano, who I know was a big part of the Saints. 3 wins this week in Sioux Falls, where they had been having a tough time beating the home team. But, yeah, to me, it's just a nod went to Roach in my eyes.
For the pitcher of the week, we chose Frank Duncan, who was 1-0, pitched 14 innings against Fargo-Moorhead this past week, did not yield a run at all, 11 hits, struck out 11. Choplik had 3 saves in his 3 appearances, which is great for Chicago, but I just find it hard to not go with a guy with 14 consecutive scoreless innings.
No, Duncan has been, you know, as much as we talked about how good that staff was going to be with McGovern and Mitchell Lamson and
Kevin Hilton.
Yeah, Hilton also. Duncan kind of snuck under the radar for a little bit. We definitely noticed him now, but he had slipped under the radar. But, boy, another big week for him. And like Dan said, a guy that would have been pitching for Kansas City this year has been a really big find for Rick Forney.
Well, again, no disrespect to Adam Choplik, but I just look at the
– what
I know, really. I know. That's for a reliever, too. You know, I just think that's awesome for a closer.
I can see him just killing a barbecue buffet. Choplik.
We talk about the big, what's the situation? And this wasn't like he was tossing 7 shutout innings in a 9-0 blowout. Both the games he started were close contests that Sunday's contest was a 0-0 tie through 7 innings. This guy is just pitch for pitch matching up with any other starter he's opposing right now and is just looking unhittable.
Right. That's from one of the guys that Winnipeg has that can match up with anyone that Chicago is trotting out at this point.
Very true. You know, Kevin, going back to Silviano for a moment, I talked a little bit with this about this with Mike Meyer, and I think this is something that is kind of neglected to talk about this season, and that is the depth at the bottom of teams' lineups. Okay, now you and I have talked about, like, Wes Darvall hitting, I think he hit 9th a couple of days ago when I was looking at Winnipeg, okay? I think 3-for-4 from the 9th spot, if I remember, on Saturday. But it's John Silviano, Max Murphy, and Mitch Gelfi. Okay, the 7, 8, 9 guys for St. Paul all homered yesterday in that big victory for Eddie Medina. And it's like if you look at the 7 through 9 parts of every lineup out there, there is seriously not an easy lineup, an easy spot in anyone's lineup this season.
No, it's like facing like 6 really solid American League teams. It's not like the NL, other than this year where he or you maybe had a soft hitter and then a pitcher at the bottom of the order, or in the association in previous years where you stashed a rookie at the bottom of the order that you knew wasn't going to hit much. It's, you got to wear your big boy pants every inning if you're out there on the mound.
Absolutely. And it's been when a guy is struggling and they've kind of moved him down in the lineup, it's not because, they're just looking to kind of hide him. And the guys above them, you know, a guy hitting seventh or eighth could be a 300 guy with three homers and 15 RBI at this point. And I just, you know, Dan talked about this a little bit here on the show earlier about the depth and talent of the league this season. This is really fun baseball to watch. And anybody who's not spending some time watching this kind of thing, I don't really understand, Kevin.
Yeah, it's almost like your batting order is 1A, 2A, 3A, 4A, and then 1B, 2B, 3B, 4B, 5B. It's almost like you got top five hitters in both part of your batting order.
Well, we did not talk about them tonight, and I think it's important to discuss those red-hot Winnipeg Goldeyes right now. Kevin, we're going about to see learn a little bit about what's going to happen in this league this season when Winnipeg travels to Chicago starting on Tuesday. Here's the two hottest teams right now. I think the Goldeyes have won five in a row, and Chicago's won five of their last six. And we're going to see who really is the team to beat after this week, I think.
Right. Doesn't quite work out perfect for Winnipeg, and I'm sure they would have liked to have had Duncan available to face the Dogs, but Duncan had just thrown on Sunday afternoon. But, you know, like we said, Winnipeg's got good arms to throw anyway. And, yeah, we'll see, though. I think the big part of that matchup is going to be the Winnipeg bats against Chicago pitching.
I think so, too. And it's going to be interesting to see if Victor Rose can keep himself hot right now. A few other guys in that Chicago lineup are starting to put up some big power numbers. I think they had five homers in yesterday's ball game. So
yeah, in five, I think they only did they hit in five innings or four?
Five and five innings. Rain shortened game after J.D. Busfield left after five, and that was it. So one hitter through five, as a matter of fact, for him there this season. So first shutout in the league. We should mention that as well for Chicago. So I think this is going to be an exciting series there to see what comes out of that. And unfortunately, because of the depth of the league, it might be hard for a Fargo-Moorhead right now to climb themselves out of the situation. They're getting St. Paul, and then they go to Milwaukee, and they could come out of this week 1-5 or 2-4 once again.
Right, and at some point, the hole's just going to get a little bit too deep. You know, that's the thing with this league this year, with the six teams. It's not like previous years where a team says, well, we're facing teams from the South, so if you don't do well, it's not completely affecting us. But every game is a divisional matchup. There's no crossing with the South Division, so that just makes every game that much bigger.
You are 100% correct. Well, Kevin, we want to talk about a little bit of other stuff going on around there, around baseball. We talked a little bit with Dan about Major League Baseball's situation with the COVID-19 and the Miami Marlins and Baltimore Orioles canceling their game tonight. You know, I don't think enough can be said about the great job that the American Association has done in protecting players. And so I think I just wanted to spend a moment here to talk about this a little bit more, that we've seen two instances on the same day at the same team in the first weekend of the season, not a peep since. So we're 3 weeks later, haven't had a single problem with this. And for all of those out there who thought there's no way they're going to be able to play the season, it's going to be canceled after 20 days or whatever, you know, kind of a thumbs down to them.
Right. How dare they doubt it? How dare they doubt the mighty American Association?
The double Joshes. Those guys know what's going on there, and we want to pat them on the back for, you know, I don't know exactly what they went through to develop all the protocols and who they talked to, but they made some smart decisions out there because it seems like even with fans there, you know, Major League Baseball doesn't even have anybody there. Now I understand they're in air travel and all the other stuff that goes into that. So there's a factor that we haven't, you know, we're not having included in here, but You know, they're having fans at games. You know, there's a great opportunity.
They're not piping in crowd noise or like they would do in a studio show.
Exactly. And I was kind of silly at the Dodgers game. I watched for a few seconds on Saturday that they were doing that. I thought that was ridiculous. But we were talking a little bit about stuff to watch out there. And Kevin, I had to tell you that I was stunned on ESPN a couple of mornings ago when I woke up and saw that ESPN was showing Korean baseball. And I thought to myself, you have American Association Baseball right here, professional baseball, and a lot of people would know some of these names that are playing in this league. Okay? You know, Eric Stout and, you know, Butler and some of these, Eddie Butler and some of these guys are people that are recognizable names to Major League Baseball fans. Why are you showing Korean baseball and not American Association Baseball? Kevin, I don't understand other than the fact that ESPN is completely stupid.
Well, I think it's, I agree with ESPN being stupid, but I do present this bit of logic. Those games are being live at that time of day. Instead of just showing 15 reruns of SportsCenter, they're showing live sports, and you got kids that are home on summer vacation, and they want to watch a ball game, and, well, they're up that time in the morning, and they get to watch live baseball. I know 13-year-old Kevin would have enjoyed the heck out of watching a live game at 8 or 9 in the morning as opposed to just another package show of highlights. Although, you know, back then, though, SportsCenter, you didn't have MLB Network, and the local channels only showed local game highlights. Remember when that used to be the thing on SportsCenter in the morning? You'd see all the highlights of every game in the league, and it was just opened up a whole new world, and now we just kind of take that for granted, and we expect it. So yeah, the roundabout way of saying is maybe this is the way to get some viewers in and actually show them some live sports in the morning. You remember, this was the same ESPN that once had Australian rules football as part of their programming.
I watched that. I just want to tell you that
it worked, didn't it?
You know that I learned a little bit about Australian rules football, and I always loved the ref down there at the goalpost in the white jacket and white hat. That when a guy kicked it through the middle goalpost, it came out and pointed both fingers out. I don't know exactly what that, I mean, that was like a 6-point score, I think is what that meant. That was a long time ago, but that was,
like he was pulling out a double shooter.
Exactly. But that he had to be in a white trench coat and white hat, I always thought was, that was something. Like Inspector Clouseau was reffing the game. Man, that was something. I also want to talk about something that I find a little over the top now. Okay, now, before the season began, Kevin and I had talked with Mike Meyer kind of as a prep for the season, and I had said to Kevin that I wish I had asked Mike about, do you not room guys together that are like your two-star players, like Clint Coulter and Ale Lago would not be rooming together? And I happened to be up with in Milwaukee in the first week of the season and talking with Anthony Barone about that specific question I asked him. And he said to me, you know, Rob, these guys are in the locker room together all the time and are out there in the field. It really doesn't matter. They're going to be around, and if one guy's infected, you know, there's really nothing you can do about that. That seemed like incredible logic to me. And I thought, you know what? You're 100% correct. So when I was watching for about 30 seconds an NBA game on Saturday night and watching how these players and their coaching staff are separated by 2 and 3 seats from one another, I thought, why are you even wasting your time on this? These guys are running against each other in practice and during games and stuff. This seems to be like, and they're in the locker room, that you're separating them during the game makes no sense to me at all. And I'm kind of shaking my head, Kevin, going, I think the look has become more important than practicality now.
Right, like I had pointed out with the way baseball's been presenting their MLB has been presenting their game, it almost seems like they're more so trying to make a social statement as opposed to just playing the game.
I think you're absolutely right, and it's sad to see that. Well, Kevin, I kind of ranted off on here for a few moments. So tell us what's going on at the 10th inning stretch, Kevin.
Well, I threw together a blog last night, wrapped up the Saints Week in Review, and just talked about how many different definitions of home and home teams there have been this summer. So, you know, I'll give it a read on 10thinningstretchdog.blogspot.com.
You know, before getting off this, Kevin, I did want to talk a little bit about, you got to check out the high school baseball tournament out there at CHS Field. So that was pretty cool. Well, like, kids probably happy to get back to the diamond.
Yeah, as someone that's watched a lot of amateur baseball this summer, I can see there's quite a drop-off from amateur to high school. But you know what? It was a gorgeous day out at CHS Field. The field looks in phenomenal condition. It was just good to see any baseball out there, even if it was only like 100 people there. But just hope that there's some professional baseball there more sooner or later. Funny story of a gal was doing public address announcing, and I could hear her before the game, and I thought she was like on a computer, and they had like music on the computer, and that she spoke when the music was done. And here it was the public address announcer. This public address announcer, she sounded like Siri.
Interesting.
Yeah, it was really odd. And the story I got was that she wants to be a PA announcer, and she's doing this for free. But I don't know if now betting Jimmy Johnson.
Yeah,
I was ready for her to say that my door was ajar. Or
wow.
Maybe the turn at the next exit.
Well, maybe it's not sports she's really auditioning for. So, looking for the long-term game.
She's no Lee Adams. You know, she doesn't have the Carnival Barker voice like Lee Adams. No, she sounds like Siri.
You know, Kevin, before heading out tonight, something hit me this weekend. That on tonight's show, if this would have been a normal season, we would have been talking about the home run derby going on tonight.
Yes, you know, I've been getting like a bunch of reminders on Facebook from pictures I took last year at the home run derby and the game itself. And, oh man, I can't believe it's already been a year. But, yeah, I'm sure it would have been a good time, just like it was last year.
We'd have been getting ready for tomorrow night's All-Star game, which is scheduled for July 28th. Obviously, no All-Star game this year. And so it's exciting that we get some baseball. But, you know, some things have been lost along the way. And I think the league had planned to have the All-Star game in Chicago next year. I hope that's still up, because Chicago's a great place for that game. Would be awesome to have there in Chicago. And so it's weird still to think about what's kind of missing.
Right.
Well, Kevin, do you have a great final thought for us to head us out tonight?
Wow. Didn't really give this one much thought. I thought maybe
we talked about a lot of stuff today, Kevin.
Yeah, with Dan's final thought, I thought, well, maybe I can take this one off, but...
Well, I want to give you an idea, if I can, that I'd like you to kind of run with tonight. Let's talk about just the excitement of home, you know, not kind of just away from your blog. Let's just talk about having the feel of being at home. Let's talk about that a little bit tonight. The feeling of being at home.
Feeling of being home.
What's the feeling of being home, Kevin?
You know, from my experience at CHS Field just last week, just it's everything you feel comfortable with. And it's, you know, you have comfort food that just seems natural to eat. I never really got that definition, but there is such a thing.
I think there's also comfort home, where you sit down, you look around, the surroundings are familiar, the looks are familiar, the sounds are familiar, and it's just where you know, it's, you know where you belong. And for me, that's CHS Field or any ballpark around that has a crack in the bat and the roar of the crowd.
I think that's beautifully said, because there's a lot of people
who
feel...
Good job, improv in the whole thing.
Well, that was awesome, because there's a lot of people who feel they don't belong somewhere. And so my recommendation is to take Kevin's advice and go out and find where your home is, because it doesn't necessarily have to be in your house, just where you belong. That's a great thought.
Read my blog, because I did actually incorporate a Robert Frost quote in it, so which I think is very appropriate.
That's awesome. Well, we want to thank Dan Vaughn once again for joining us tonight. For Kevin Lucco, I am Rob Panier. We will see you next time on This Week in the Association.